You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we are here live right now with a very special MLK Day edition of the M Squared TechCast right here at PodcastDetroit.com. We've got a great show for you, lots of interesting guests, but we're going to get started with Mike and I just talking about stuff.
Yeah, we don't do this much.
No.
Normally, we're like intensely questioning people like Tim Brochet or something.
Yes.
Who will be our second segment.
Who is sitting here and will be the next guest. That's right. But we wanted to start off because the public show opened on Saturday, and it is a big deal in Detroit. It's sort of like Fleet Week here for for Detroit.
It's a good reference there. I like that.
The North American International Auto Show is now open and up and operating, and Mike and I both spent press preview days there last week. I also did a shift in the booth of my employer, Lawrence Technological University. That's our shameless plug bell.
Yep.
I did a shift in the LTU booth for industry preview days as well.
Oh, did you? That was a lot of people. I heard like 10,000 or so.
A lot more crowded than the media days were. Yeah.
That's one of the things we need to talk about was trying to be kind here, but I've been going to that show for 25 years, and that was kind of like, you know,
underwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, the Germans, except for VW, weren't there.
Yeah,
We didn't have Volvo.
We didn't have BMW. We didn't have Porsche. We didn't have
Mitsubishi. Wasn't there
Saab, Audi?
God, this long list of who wasn't there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the back they had those food booths. I'd never seen that before.
Well, there didn't used to be enough room for them.
Yeah.
But I did hear that the number of new vehicle introductions was about half of what it usually is.
Yeah.
It was 30 something. Instead of 60 something. Yeah. And I think this year's show, while it was still fun to go to, and I still recommend it as a fun thing to do in Detroit, it just did not have the jam-packed, you know, automotive glitz of prior years. And I think there's a reason for that.
Well, it's kind of trade shows in general. It's a big expense. I talked to John McElroy, who's like Mr. Auto, and I said, I don't really cover sales and marketing. I'm looking at the tech. What's your take on this? And he goes, Detroit per square foot is the most expensive auto show in the world.
Okay.
I mean, they just prices are $10 million. You can, by the time you get done, you can spend on one of those big booths with all the stuff flying and the people, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's probably even enough money to need permission from somebody at companies like GM and Ford.
Yeah,
that's
$10 million.
Yeah.
And then the other issue is that there just wasn't a lot of new car introductions, period. I mean, especially from the Germans. I mean, the Europeans just aren't running out a lot of. The cycle is 2020 vehicles will be big. So hopefully come June 2020, when this turns into the, whatever it is, the Celebrate Detroit Week, it's going to have a different spin on it, that maybe then. But even then, I said, John, do you think they're going to come back? And he goes, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like these things are becoming passe.
Well, and I think also the fact that this was the last wintertime show had something to do with it as well, because the next North American International Auto Show is not scheduled until June of 2020, which is
tie in with the Grand Prix.
16 months, 17 months from now. Yeah,
you know, it's going to be. I don't think they got the details worked out, but what I've heard is it's going to be a big Celebrate Detroit all week long. Outdoor stuff.
Well, that's what people were telling me is that there are opportunities to do a lot of things outdoors. Obviously, Detroit, if you're bringing in the world's automotive press or business press, Detroit looks a lot better in June than it does in January, right? It's going to be better PR from that standpoint. Also, you're going to be able to do a lot of things outdoors. The only weather risk that time of year is thunderstorms, not snow and ice. So you'll be able to set up big circus tents and do all sorts of cool things outside.
Well,
rain or
and
shine.
Maybe more driving of the vehicles themselves. I don't know what they'll set up, but I mean, they had that little track set up by, what was it, Kia with the, what was the Sportage or what was it?
I'm sorry, it was their, Kia. I don't remember what the name of the vehicle
SUV.
Was.
No, it wasn't an SUV. It was more of a sport utility.
Yeah.
Well, that is an SUV, but I mean, it was more, instead of the one that drives down the road for soccer moms, it was more of a real off-road kind of vehicle.
Yeah, more Jeep-like.
Yeah, so they had that track set up indoors. I didn't do it, but I was watching people drive that around.
Yep.
Just to get that experience.
Well, they used to do some of that down in the basement of the auto show, yeah, but there wasn't, I don't think there was anything in the basement this year.
Well, Automobility.
Oh, Automobility was there. Yeah,
65 companies down there.
Okay, yeah, that was the high-tech part of the show.
That's where mostly I was. I mean, I did the day one. I went to all the, and that's the other thing. The press previews pooped out at 1:40 was the latest one. And no, and years past, you'd start at 8 o'clock in the morning and go till at least 6 o'clock at night. Every half an hour, boom, 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 go, yep. go. So it was really, but I mean, for the public, I mean, I'm being hypercritical here because I cover it and I have covered it for a long time. But for the public, it'd be great. I mean, the original intent of the show was the Detroit Area Auto Dealers, DADA, wanted to get people out in the wintertime to start looking at new vehicles. So come March or April, when Dad gets that checkbook out, they'd buy a new vehicle.
Right.
And then it morphed into this international show, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, the original intent was to help sales during a slow period.
Pretty much.
Which, you know, was right after Christmas. Right. And that was the slowest time of year
first quarter is dead for car sales.
Yeah. So, but it's evolved into something way beyond that. Now, have you ever been to the Consumer Electronics Show?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Okay. That's what I think they want to try to replicate, because a lot of the stuff at CES now is out in the parking lots of the Las Vegas Convention Center. I know Visteon's automotive interiors exhibit is not in the convention hall. It's under an enormous circus tent outside where they can, you know, roll up the flaps on a nice day and, you know, roll them down if it rains or something. Which it occasionally does in Vegas in January. Yeah, but I mean, so you know, that's the kind of atmosphere I think they're going for, is a more indoor-outdoor show. Plus, they can wrap it around the Grand Prix and have a whole motorsports aspect that they, you know, that they can't really do in January. You know, the only racing is in Florida this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's kind of what they're going for.
Well, then some say CES was like Detroit Auto Show 1, and then the next week it was Detroit Auto Show 2.
Yeah, so they were competing with CES as well, yeah, in terms of the auto companies, because the auto companies' displays at CES, while not as elaborate as the ones at the Detroit Auto Show, are darn near as big. A lot of them have really big exhibits there, especially the suppliers that are, you know, trying to sell automotive electronics.
The other explanation I heard was, you know, those news conferences are, what, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and you run to the next one, and it's always like they never have them right next to each other. You're running across Cobo. I did 7 miles on Monday, you know. So
kept track on the Fitbit.
Yeah, I had my Fitbit on. I'm like, God dang. You know, so, but, to, you know, so it's just, you know, CES, you got that, but you got a lot of things going on. It's just between cycles. But I just think, in general, live events are tough. Unless they're hyper-local, which I'll put in a shameless plug for mine on April 29th. Okay, thank you. I have to sneak that in wherever I can.
Okay, yes.
So ours is hyper-local, IoT Tech Connect, focused just on Michigan technology. You don't have to fly anywhere. I mean, you just drive down to the Science Center, ample parking. We're going to feed you. You know, but I mean, it's really focused on a really unique vertical. And of course, autos are vertical too, in a sense. But you know, you can go to these Chicago or Vegas or LA for these big shows, but you're going to spend big dollars to do that. So, I mean, I think that's your two extremes. It's like any other industry. If you're in the middle, you're dead. You're either going to be a small little company,
hyper local,
or you're going to be really big.
Yeah.
But if you're in the middle, not good.
That's also appears to be the case with the cars on display at the auto show. How's that for a segue?
Oh, I like that.
Okay,
yeah.
So what'd you think of the cars on display? I know you had a line that I stole, is that the cars on display at the auto show, you could either buy a 750 horsepower supercar like a Mustang or a Challenger.
I think Tempur Shea, that's on her list. We'll talk to her about that next.
All right.
But then,
or a $60,000 truck the size of a school bus.
Oh, yeah, that new Ram 350.
Yeah.
You could haul what they sell, 30,000-pound trailer.
Yeah.
I'm going to be doing that all the time.
Oh, no doubt.
And then and it wasn't hybrid. It was just electric. I mean, they're moving away from hybrids just to pure electric, which is kind of.
So little bitty, either enormous supercars and trucks or little bitty roller skates that are electric. There didn't seem to be really a whole lot in the middle.
No, not really.
Yeah. And I go out on the roads and I see a lot of mid-sized and small SUVs these days, but a lot of the attention seemed to be to big trucks and muscle cars. Of course, muscle cars are exciting. They're fun. They're sexy. Everybody knows. But, you know, it's not what people drive every day.
I don't know how many people are going to go out and buy the Shelby GT, which has not yet been priced. But according to
six figures, I'm sure.
Yeah, yes. It's going to be $120, $130, maybe more, you know. So,
oh, my God. I could get five of my escapes for that. So.
Right. So, I mean, it's really the crossover has become the vehicle. And now we're going to see the electric crossovers and it's still evolving. But anyway, what's to become of the Detroit Auto Show? And, of course, it's officially called the North American International Auto Show. But we'll
see. I haven't even heard if it's still going to be called that. I don't know what it's going to be called.
Yeah, so. Probably just should go back. Because Paris is called the Paris Auto Show, right?
Well, everybody kind of calls it the Detroit Auto Show anyway, except on second reference in news stories, it's sometimes NAIAS. And people look at that and go, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I use those acronyms with some of the people I'm talking to, and their eyes, I can tell they don't understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So
it's the Detroit Auto Show.
Yes.
You know,
boil it down.
Yeah. keep it simple when you can.
Yeah. You know, we'll keep updating that because, it's just a general theme right now for June. And we never know the date in June. I'm not sure when the Grand Prix is in June.
I don't think they've formally set the dates yet, at least not that I've heard.
I thought I heard the week of June 6th. It'll start June 6th.
Okay. All right.
They're going to go right in between the Grand Prix and the fireworks.
Ooh.
Oh, interesting choice.
Bracket it there, huh?
Okay.
I like that.
Well, I know they'd have to have it after the Chamber Mackinac Conference, right? Because that's something a lot of people go to.
That's late May, though, right?
Yeah, well, it's the weekend after Labor Day. Memorial Day, I'm sorry, misspoke. It's the week after Memorial Day is the Mackinac Conference. And sometimes that's late May and sometimes it's early June, a day or two into June.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It all depends on, you know, when the Monday falls there for Memorial Day. But the only bad thing about this, I think, is that, you know, nobody wants to have an event in Detroit in December, January, February, because, you know, you might get snowed out. And in the summer, July and August, everybody's gone. Everybody's on vacation. So nobody has any events then. So it seems like we've got all these bajillion events squeezed into September, October. And
well, some in November. November before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, okay.
After Thanksgiving, all bets are off.
Everybody checks out. Yeah, so. Right. And then April, May, you know, and a little bit into June.
June. Yeah.
So that's, you know, it seems like we have all our events and we're only using 5 or 6 months of the year. But, you know, I guess you got to go where the weather is and you got to go when people are available. So.
Yeah, we're like Detroit's like Paris in August. No one's here.
Yeah,
you know,
and forget about this used to drive me crazy as a reporter. Forget about reaching anybody in December. Like, forget it. You know, I mean, you pretty much can't.
Well, trying to market our show, I said pretty much after mid December, forget it. You're not going to get anybody's attention until after the auto show is over.
Yeah.
So you lose 30 days. Just, you know.
Yep.
So.
Okay, but I mean, there was fun, you know, for the automotive enthusiast at the auto show, and like I said, I'd still recommend it as a fun thing to do this weekend if you're not doing.
Oh yeah, I mean, just the family thing. It's still a great show. I mean, we're the industry press, so we cover it. So you know, we're going to look at it differently. But I mean, for $15, and I guess kids for $6 and. If you're under 6, then it's a freebie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun to walk around. I mean, you're going to see vehicles all in one place that you won't typically go. And God help you, if you go to a showroom,
right,
would be pounced upon immediately, you know. So you're like a bulldog latching on your leg there, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And my recommendation for people with kids is go first thing in the morning. You know, the little kids are up then anyway. So that's when we always used to do it.
I can only imagine. Today, I'll bet they do 20,000.
Yeah.
More than that, probably.
Well, we used to go right when it opened in the morning at 9 or 10. I think over the years it's opened at both times, depending on the year. And then, you know, it's worth 3 or 4 hours or something like that. But then by the time you leave at 1 o'clock and start looking someplace in downtown Detroit for lunch, that's when it gets really packed in there. And you just, you know,
well,
I guess you could still see stuff, but I wouldn't recommend it. I'd recommend first thing in the morning.
And the parking garage is You mean 40,
oh, yeah. 40 bucks?
Right by Kobo there, where that little bar is, normally is $5 to park there during the day. It was 40 bucks.
I parked on the roof. The city was still only charging 15, so that was okay. But I don't think the roof is available during the public show.
No.
I think that's probably more for all the industry figures and whatnot that are there, so all the Kobo people.
So how we doing, Jess? Well, we got to wrap it up. I just got the wrap it up signal.
Okay.
So.
Well, we'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast in just a second. Our guest will be Tember Shea, and she will bring with her one of the co-founders of Priva. I'm going to butcher the name pronunciation. I know it is. Is it Dagan Meshulam?
Dagan Meshulam.
Dagan Meshulam. Okay. All right. Well, pretty close.
Pretty close.
All right.
Better than we normally do.
Anyway, we'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast here at Podcast Detroit. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening at PodcastDetroit.com.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
It's Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
And we're back for the second segment of M Squared TechCast, which is the Matt and Mike show, actually. M Squared, get it? Okay. So anyway, we have with us.
If you can think of a better name, email us.
Yeah, I know. We were
email
stuck.
Us,
we were.
Yeah, we couldn't figure out desperate. What to call it.
Yep. So I have Tember Shea. I almost said the old company with Invest Detroit
Ventures.
Yes, Invest Detroit Ventures.
Yeah.
And so she's a regular, and she's got with her one of the co-founders of Priva. Company that was just explained to me before we went on air, because when I got her explanation, I still didn't understand what it was. So take it away.
Because I made it short and sweet.
Yeah, so, it was like.
But now you have 13 minutes.
Yeah, I have 13 minutes. But the great thing is, this is a great segue from your segment earlier about the auto show.
Yeah.
Priva was actually exhibiting at Automobile D.
Oh, were you? I didn't know you were down there.
Yeah, was down at the auto show doing that, which is great because we. Got on their radar. They got on our radar because they were a Techstars mobility company last year.
Ooh, got it all. Ted Serbinski.
Yeah.
The elusive one who never returns phone calls. So
he's a little busy. They were doing a little rebranding.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Okay. And they're moving into the Lear building downtown now.
Oh, I didn't
They've
know
expanded.
That.
They're expanding. They're going further out than just automotive.
Because they used to be at the Ford Field or something, right?
Yeah. They used to be at Ford Field.
Oh, and just this year, they moved to the WeWork, actually, before moving over to the Lear Innovation Center for next year.
Yeah.
Ah, talk directly into the microphone there. There we go. Okay,
there
good.
We go.
Otherwise, she'll yell at you, and you don't want that to
we
happen.
Don't want that.
So,
anyway, Priva. Priva actually, like I said, came onto our radar at Techstars this past summer at Invest Detroit, and we spent some time talking to these guys and just thought, what a really big pain point and a problem to solve. Because what they're doing with their I'm going to let Dagan give me a description of Priva because he does it best. So tell us what Priva is about.
Sure. And I also appreciate, Matt and Mike, that you don't always get it upon first hearing about it. Back in the early days of the kind of mobility revolution driven by companies, or at least portions of it driven by companies like Lyft and Uber, for years people also kind of questioned, but isn't it just a taxi company? I don't understand. I can just put my hand up and get a taxi. And it really took experiencing it for most people to have that kind of future experience of, just press a button, the vehicle pulls up to wherever you are, could be at a corner, could be at the door of your house. You seamlessly get in, get out, never even need to exchange, money to see really how different it is of a mobility experience. And in that sense, Priva is very, very similar. So to describe it is very much like a longer distance Uber. So instead of an intra-city taking people around town, maybe from the suburbs to, the metro airport, we would actually take people from either the metro area or the Detroit airport to, for instance, Chicago or to Indianapolis or to Columbus, Cleveland, Toronto, Pittsburgh. I've just listed a few of the cities that we have already delivered rides to for our Detroit-based customers. And another very important aspect of the service is that you may, when you're traveling those longer distances, you may not want to be sitting in the back of a typical Lyft or an Uber, which could be small, could not be very clean, certainly won't be private from the driver, and certainly isn't really intended for a 3-, 4-, 5-hour trip. So our customers actually sit in the back of a private space of a small commercial van.
With like a glass between you and the driver?
So it's actually an entirely private partition wall. The partition drops so that you can see out front. You can speak with the driver. There's also a kind of intercom system that will speak to the driver. But otherwise, yeah, the back is completely private. So it's very much like sitting in a private office, which is a much more ideal environment for a longer duration of travel.
And you go as far away as Toronto. I grabbed Timber's phone here. You go as far away as Toronto and Milwaukee.
Yeah.
That's one heck of a long drive there.
Yeah, we do anything up to about 300 miles, and it's partly due to our business model. We have the drivers and the vehicles return back to the home base at night. We do have a lot of requests from customers that say that they want to go even further, and it's partially due to the hassles of these shorter commuter or short-haul flights.
And Boy, and thanks to security theater, I'm going to be blunt about it, at airport these days, and the problems of parking and, you know, everything else getting to the airport, waiting at the airport, security at the airport, the line where you decide to drive rather than fly keeps getting longer and longer and longer. You know, I can remember once when I was a reporter at Cranes flying to Chicago for a business thing, and you wouldn't do that now. At least I wouldn't. I'd much rather drive it.
You're exactly right, and there's really interesting data on this, and that line tends to be around 200 to 250 or 300 miles, depending on, of course, the type of traveler, why they're traveling, what their budget is, how many people are traveling together. But you're right, it's a gray zone, and a lot of people are choosing buses, people choose trains. Those are also not ideal for various purposes, and increasingly, the modern expectation of travel is to just simply press that button on your phone, have a vehicle pick you up at your door, and have it take you to exactly where you're going so that you can stay connected, you can be productive, you can rest the entire time instead of all the pain points that you mentioned.
Do you bill by the trip, by the person, by both, or what?
So right now, we're early stage, so we keep it simple, and we simply bill by the mile, so effectively just the trip distance. We've had a lot of requests, though, from our single travelers to be pooled together with other people. So that's something that, you know, we'll introduce at a future date. But for now, you essentially charter the vehicle. Much like you would just charter a small plane or something.
Or even a limo for that matter.
I was going to say, what kind of vehicles are we talking here? Is it a limo? Is it a van? What is it?
So right now we use what are essentially the modern limo. So the days of kind of cutting apart a Lincoln Continental and lengthening it, which is absurd for many engineering and safety purposes, are kind of gone. And people are beginning to increasingly turn to Mercedes-Benz Sprinters, Ford Transits, vehicles like this, where you don't need to change the body, the chassis, the powertrain, a lot of aspects of the vehicle. They're taller, they're longer from the factory. And so we work with upfitters that essentially turn the back of them into, like I mentioned, a mobile office. Actually, the name Priva comes from private jet on wheels. It's very much an environment like that. And what's really important about what we do, which is not common, is we have the seats face each other. And of course, the seats recline. There's leg rests. There's big screen TVs. But the important aspect of the seats facing each other is that we've created an environment much like we're in now, where you look at the people that you're engaging with, that you're talking to. And what we've heard back from our customers, because we will also deliver rides in just normal black SUVs, Suburbans, Escalades, et cetera, is that after experiencing both, they say they only want the mobile office because of the experience of how they're able to travel with their companions, be them friends or family or coworkers.
Okay. So when did the service start? How many vehicles have you got on the road at this point?
So it actually launched just in the summer of 18. So we're only about 6-7 months old. So
a baby, as it were.
Yeah, an early stage company. And we have 2 Mercedes-Benz Sprinters on the road right now. And one thing that's really nice, we haven't yet gone into our digital advertising mode because the service.
We can help you with that, by the way.
Yeah, and we need help. We are absolutely for help. One of the main reasons we're here today, this helps. It's just been the customer response has just been driven by word of mouth and just by positive experiences and customers traveling to other Midwest cities and talking to their clients or their business partners there, and then they request rides. So we've just simply been relatively busy operating the business.
Huh.
Now, tell me about, I know that you've thought you're looking to a subscription service for the future. Describe what that would look like.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we have some smaller businesses that we're working with that regularly are traveling between, you know, a couple of our cities. Very common we target companies like this. Maybe they have an office in Ann Arbor and Chicago, or, you know, one in Columbus and one in Detroit. You know, of course, businesses tend to exist regionally. The vast majority of businesses will expand regionally before going outside of that area. And a number of the customers have said, hey, if I know that I have a team traveling every week or every other week, can I get on a subscription model such that I know, even as people are joining my company, I can say to them, this is how we travel. You're not going to lose time out of your week to security lines, boarding lines, you know, taxi cabs. Even though we may ask you to go to and from, say, Detroit and Cleveland regularly, this is how you're going to do it. You'll be productive the entire time. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of want that not only guarantee that, you know, we can be their service provider of choice, but there's also regularity in their travel expense, which is something they don't have today.
Well, let me ask you, though. I mean, if you're going somewhere, Toronto, for a business meeting, and you're going to turn around and come back, the vehicle doesn't come back and then come back to get you again, does it?
So it all depends on whether or not it's a same-day round trip. Uh-huh. So for a same-day round trip, what we do is we do have the vehicle sit and wait while people have their meetings.
And then there's a charge, I'm sure, for that,
and then they
right?
come back. Yeah, and that's actually part of the subscription service. So, you know, there's certain things that we'll waive, you know, cancellation fees, wait fees, et cetera. Uh-huh. And what's nice there is, of course, we have people in the vehicle going both ways. Uh-huh. And it's interesting that you mentioned Toronto and just that use case as well, because we have a huge amount of business that's same day round trip, because people become acutely sensitive to how much time they're going to lose because they have to be in person for that 1 or 2 hour meeting, but they're going to be traveling 8 hours. Right. And then the idea of being able to sit in an office that takes you there and takes you back and have an entire workday back drives them towards our service. If you're going to spend the night there, then ideally what we would do is, yes, drop you off. And when we have more scale, there'd be more, you know, regularity, our ability to find another customer, bring them back to Detroit from Toronto.
Oh, I was going to say, because then that's a
You don't want to
do that's 4 or 5 hours.
I was
going to
say, if you're in a transportation business, you don't want to be deadheading at any point, right?
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
Yeah. So
exactly. So one question that I have for all of the early stage startups is, you know, you're going through growing pains. Are you hiring right now? And if so, what kind of skills are you looking for, people you're looking for?
It's rubbed off, apparently.
I was taught by the best.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're on the verge of growing. We're very, very close. One thing that we're still focusing somewhat on is raising capital to be able to scale, you know, the way that we want to scale, because we're already operating the business. There's a couple of really key areas that we're looking to grow in, though, and we do ultimately want to do these in the Detroit area. This is where we have the most support, being able to do events like this. There's a great community here that's excited about the future of mobility. The couple of areas, though, are to build out our technology that underpins all of this. And right now, there's nothing too sophisticated about it, but there's a tremendous amount of data that nobody has about ground-based regional transportation. And as vehicles become electric and autonomous, this will become increasingly mainstream. And then the other areas, generally in the areas of sales and marketing, to really show just continued growth in traction of our service beyond the word of mouth that has driven us to date.
Are you doing okay on finding drivers, too? Do you need drivers?
Well, they got to be chauffeur drivers. They got to be specially licensed, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there's actually no special licensing required, but we do. It's just due to the number of seats and the weight of the vehicle that drives a lot of that.
Okay.
But we do want that, and we only hire that because it's important. You know, you're not just with the driver for 20 or 30 minutes. You're with them for several hours.
All day, maybe.
And so, yep. So not only are there chauffeur licensing, but there's specialties in passenger transportation. And so, yeah, we're actually always looking for that because of the irregularity of the schedule that we hold. We like to have a nice pool of drivers per vehicle that we have.
Excellent. So how do people find out more and book their ride?
It's easy. They just go to our website, travelpriva.com, and there's more information up there. And we're also live, so they can book rides right on the site.
Hmm. Excellent.
Hmm. Okay.
Excellent. Any other questions, guys?
Gosh, no, I don't think.
No.
Wait and see how this all turns out. So imagine that's why you're with Invest Detroit, because you need to invest in more vehicles, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And something that's important about that is that, you know, the future of transportation is continually going to be driven by vehicles. You know, it's very important to understand the unique vehicles. Our vehicles are a bit larger, which makes them better for longer distances. Fleets of larger vehicles are required as mobility expands outside the bounds of each regional area.
We have to leave it at that. Matt, take us out.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. And I did want to give you one more chance to say the website for your company there.
Sure. It's TravelPriva, and Priva is spelled PRIVA.com.
Okay. We'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another fun-filled segment of the M Squared TechCast here at PodcastDetroit.com.
And we have a recurring guest who has actually been on the show for a while, Enrico Schaefer, who's our drone law pro man, who recently opened an office in Detroit. Did you not?
Yes, Matt, we did. Mike, good to see you guys. Yes, we always been in the case doing a lot of the UAV, the drone stuff, but with everything exciting going on in Detroit in autonomous on the vehicle side, we decided it was a perfect place for us to expand and open up our next office right there in Campus Martius.
And you're in the WeWork facility, are you not?
We are. We are in the WeWork, and it's an amazing space they've got down there with some amazing companies that we get to collaborate.
Okay.
We're having a little problem with Enrico's phone.
A little audio problem there, yes. But we'll,
are you still there, Enrico?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you now just fine.
We're just getting a little distortion on our end. So.
Yeah, it sounded like random phonemes. That was rather entertaining.
Yes.
All right. So tell us a little bit about things that companies in the autonomous space need to think about as they launch in Detroit now that you're doing that kind of legal work with them.
Yeah, so it's a lot of the classic stuff that every startup in an emerging technology space has to worry about, right? So we've got Ford bringing their autonomous group downtown. You're going to have all these startup companies growing up around Ford, and Corktown's going to be potentially one of the hot spots in the world when it comes to autonomous vehicles. So what do these companies need to be thinking about? Well, they need to be thinking about all the classic things, intellectual property protection, whether or not that's trademarks, trade secrets, patents, the contracts that they need to have in place, both their employees, their vendors, their customers, in order to protect it. Their intellectual property. A lot of the asset value that these companies are going to be based in their intangible assets, right? Their IP. So they need to make sure that they're lining that kind of stuff up really well from the get-go. The other thing that these companies have to think about is their funding rounds, because especially in new and emerging technologies, you have to fund that up. Rarely is the revenue there right out of the gate to be able to grow your company without taking an investment round. So there's a lot of different things that you can do on the front end and build your company to position yourself to be able to easily take in that funding. If a VC or angel investor comes knocking on the door, there's a lot of stuff they're going to want to see in place. And if you already have it in place, say 80%, you're going to streamline the process of being able to take in that funding round. So different types of funding rounds, everything from angel, friends and family funding at first startup to all your Series A, Series B funding, as you start to really go from maybe tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands to millions or tens of millions of dollars in funding. And there are sequences and phases to funding that venture cap, once you get to the venture capital level where they're really putting in some serious money, they're going to want to see things really lined up well. So you need the corporate attorney to be able to help you get everything in place. So as those VC folks come to the table, not only do you have things lined up and are you ready for their due diligence, but you want to get the best deal possible, right? And so if they're setting your company up to take in venture capital, they're going to set it up in a way that's going to benefit them most. If your company is on take in venture capital, there's much more likelihood that they're going to be operating within the framework that you've created. So get your ducks in a row for those funding rounds as you do it. Everyone knows at startup, there's lots of fires to put out. There's lots of things to do, and it's hard to get to some of these fundamental type issues. But the sooner you do it, the easier it is to get done, the less it's going to cost at the end of the day. So IP protection, funding rounds, these are really classic things that all emerging technology companies need to deal with, and is certainly true in the autonomous space. We've seen it on the UAV side, the autonomous vehicles, aerial vehicle side, and of course now we're seeing it on the autonomous vehicle side as well.
Which begs the question, you've been in IT law for a long time, then you went into drone law, and now you're branching out into autonomous vehicles. Is there some overlap or connection there?
Yeah, really what we do and what we've been doing is new and emerging technology company representation since 1992, when the new and emerging technology was something you may have heard of before called the internet, right?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the things that we do, from intellectual property protection to corporate, you know, both representatives and companies taking in funding rounds, contract work, transactional work, IP licensing, we've been doing that for almost 30 years. The difference is that new and emerging technology tends to express itself within new industry sectors. So the fact that it's drones or autonomous vehicles or things having to do with rolling out domain name registries, those are But the things that our law firm, Travers Legal, does day in and day out apply to all of those different industries. What we do, whether it's blockchain or autonomous, is we dig in and learn the technology, so that you're hiring attorneys who not only understand the legal issues, but they understand the tech part of the equation as well. And I will tell you, you know, Mike and Matt, the reality is that no tech company wants to talk to an attorney who doesn't understand the technology that they're working on every day. And in fact, you can't, as an attorney, effectively represent your client if you don't understand the underlying technology.
Okay.
All right, so back to what we've talked to you about a lot of times before. I'm just curious what's new and interesting in terms of drone law. What's going on with the drone industry these days? I know I see more and more use of it in the media and advertising. What else is going on?
Yeah, so you know, we've been talking drones for, what, a couple of years, you guys?
Yeah, at least.
We've been through all the different regulatory changes that have occurred from Section 333 to Part 107. The coolest thing actually that's happening in drones is that the industry is maturing, that you are now starting to see drones used commercially for lots of really good things, whether or not it's emergency services. Surprisingly, has been one of the, if not the fastest growing niche for the use of drones. So whether or not it's firefighting or search and rescue or police work, you know, that is an industry that has really embraced drones. And instead of arguing now about what the regulations say and what's allowed, how quickly the FAA is going to clear the airspace, most of the discussion now is around the fact that, there are drone companies who are offering those services, who are training those those public officials, those public workers, whether or not fire, police, search and rescue, whatever, to actually do the work. And so in the media, you're actually now starting to see the stories about how drones help save lives, right? So while the technology of drones continues to progress, so we're in the near term, technology that allows anyone to launch an app, take a look in the sky, and know exactly who is flying that drone. It's called remote identification, and the FAA is going to be requiring that for drones. And that'll be great, right? Because now it won't be some anonymous drone flying around. Every drone will have an identification number. Every pilot will have a pilot number. Mm-hmm. But anyone in the world will be able to launch amp and be able to say that drone belongs and is controlled by this person. And that takes us to ability, right? That's been one of the big challenges, is how do we make people accountable for their drone flights? The other big regulatory thing that's happening is the FAA. You might remember in 2012, Congress said, yes, we want the FAA to regulate drones, but you can't regulate hobbyists. You can't regulate the recreational drone user as long as it's called community standards, which still no one knows what that means. It probably means nothing, right? But now Congress has allowed and instructed the FAA to actually regulate recreational drones. So if you're a hobbyist and you want to go out and fly a drone, very quickly there's going to be new regulations that they are going to have to adhere to, so that there's more and more safety built into the industry.
Huh. Okay. So what other hot areas are going on in drones, or is that the main thing? Will those be like transponders? Is that like what they have for aircraft?
Yeah, so it's going to put out a signal that will allow you to be able to understand what drone that is in terms of the remote identification. As we've seen in so many new and emerging technology spaces, the government
is not
designed to try and enhance safety. But what tends to happen is the technology itself solves the problem, right? So let me give you a great example. So you could say, the government could say, we want every recreational drone pilot to register with us so that you have a registration number, you have to carry a card. Well, that's fine and all, and how many people are going to really go through the process and the FAA and actually enforce the regulation? But when all drones have built in the ability to be able to say, okay, you have to register to fly your drone in the first place to turn it on, and that goes into a database which allows us to see who you are, the actual technology is a much better way to solve the problem of, for instance, accountability. And so we've seen and again and again on the drone side, where the FAA is, regulations to solve problems, but the manufacturers are actually trying to solve those problems using technology without necessarily the government pounding on them. And there's a good reason why that almost always happens in new and emerging technology, and it's happening in the autonomous vehicle space as well. And that is because you still, if you want to be a viable option, and if you want consumers to accept autonomous vehicles, and we're seeing a lot of pushback on that right now, right?
Yep.
People are like, oh, we don't want autonomous vehicles driving around in Arizona or whatever. In order for the manufacturers to win, they have to get the public to accept the technology. Best way for the public to accept the technology is for the public to gain a comfort level that these things are safe.
I don't want to have to cut you off, but we're out of time here. So one more time, if people want to reach out to you, is it still dronelaw.pro?
Yeah, you can get us at dronelaw.pro or traverselegal.com, either or. Yeah, or just do a Google search for Enrico Schaefer. There's only one of me in the world, and your chances are you're going to find my website.
Okay, sounds
good. All right, thanks very much, Enrico Schaefer of Traverse Legal and DroneLaw.pro. We'll talk to you again soon. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to you guys.
Yeah, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And we have calling in Colin Goldsmith, who is the managing partner for P3 North America. I was introduced to that company at the management briefing seminar in Traverse City back in July, I guess, of last year. I didn't get a chance to meet Colin, but I met his business partner there and did some video interviews with him. But so welcome to the show, Colin.
Hi, thank you.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on. Well, let's start off with, I know what P3 North America is. Why don't we start off with you telling the audience what it is?
Yeah, great. So P3 North America is part of a global automotive consulting and engineering service group headquartered in Germany. We're about 4,000 people worldwide. We focus in automotive, telecommunications, and aerospace. And when it comes to automotive, we really like to focus into those new technologies like connected vehicle, autonomous vehicle, and electric vehicles.
All right. So one of those things that you're tying in with is the Amazon Alexa Auto. And I didn't even realize that there was such a thing until you sent me your talking points. So why don't we talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, sure. That's great. So I'm sure everybody knows about Amazon Alexa and has an Amazon Echo in their home probably. But what Amazon has done early this year, in August in 2018, was they released an automotive-focused API that provides a much better experience or a way to take the experience of Amazon Alexa and integrate into the vehicle with some of the core features of the vehicle supported, like media, navigation, and phone, and then the ability to build in use cases that really make sense for vehicle applications.
All right. And so where does that stand now? Is that still pretty much in development, or is there something operational?
Yeah, so actually the API is released and it's available for operations. And actually there are some OEMs in the industry that are working on implementations such as BMW and Ford. And then where P3 comes into play here is that as a service company, we're looking to support more companies to become part of that ecosystem and take advantage of the capabilities that are provided by Amazon.
Okay. I guess some good news. You were just selected as one of the winners of the Michigan Mobility Challenge just last week at the North American International Auto Show, right?
Yeah, we were super excited about that. I mean, that was a surprise we heard about at the beginning of the event, and it was great to hear from Gretchen Whitmer and her team when they announced P3 in our collaboration with some other partners as the winner there, and we're really excited to see what mobility we can bring to the region of the Middle Upper Peninsula.
Well, and so what geographic footprint are we looking at? When you say Upper Peninsula is pretty big, so what sort of geographic range is that you're going to be working in?
So, it's described as the middle UP. So, like, really those areas that are quite separated from the typical connection to networks and to a lot of the traditional connectivity that we enjoy here in Southeast Michigan. So areas like Marquette and those types of region, approximately that region would be the middle kind of area.
Okay. ride sharing. So how's that going to play out? Give us an example.
Yeah, so what we're working on here and part of the Michigan's effort to improve mobility is actually we want to focus on the portion of potential users that don't have the typical accessibility. And actually, we want to look at people that are handicapped and need support in getting around from, you know, doctor's appointments or from, you know, family events or whatever it might be. So really want to take what we see in mobility and we're starting to experience with Lyft and with Uber, and we really want to apply it to a different segment of the industry of the population that has different needs for when it comes to getting around.
So they would be connected, you do this via smartphones or something like that?
Yeah, so that will be the kind of the core connection point for the different potential users is using a smartphone app that allows them to set up a route and to call a vehicle that has support for their different needs. So if they require a wheelchair accessible vehicle, they can set that up through the application and have that vehicle come to them and help them get to their destination.
So who would actually own the vehicles involved? Would that be some of these agency partners that you're going to have?
Correct. Yeah, that would be through an agency partner type setup. Yep.
Okay. So, and who are some of these agencies?
So actually, we're working with various elements of Michigan and the MEDC, and then we're also working with a company called Move, who's providing a lot of the technical solution for this.
Yeah, we've had them on the show before. I believe they're based out of Toronto or near Toronto.
Yeah, Toronto and Montreal.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how that would be done. So you're actually partnering with them in this case then.
Correct, yeah. So P3 will do what we traditionally are very strong at is all about the integration of that technology. So how do we integrate the vehicles and the captive environment with the mobile device so that we can provide the solution. So that's where P3 comes in, and then Move really brings provides that technology interface, which is, you know, very easy to use. I've experienced it initially and see a lot of great potential out of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's especially interesting to me that this is in the Upper Peninsula, which is, you know, the central Upper Peninsula other than the city of Marquette. It's a pretty remote area. And I would imagine that if you're a handicapped person and in need of transportation, you can feel pretty darn isolated in a place like that.
Correct. That's why we think it's really important, and actually that's why we wanted to sign up for this challenge that the state of Michigan brought to us, because we think it's important. Everybody should experience the value that technology can bring to them in new mobility solutions, and we think if you're able to apply a real strong solution in an environment like this, I think you can really transport that to other regions and be very successful.
Well, you've just segued into my next question. Is okay, so you're going to work it out up there. I suppose that's going to be the ultimate challenge, but then when you go into some of these other big urban centers, it'll be much less difficult, right?
I would, there's a lot more available to make things happen, a lot more to work with. So I would expect, yes, that a lot of what we will learn here is actually probably that, as I would say, as from when I've been a test engineer in the past, you always want to test the corner cases, all those real challenging points, but then you can work your way into the middle, into the more common solutions.
All right. So, 1.18 million dollars as contracts go, is that a small contract for you guys? Big, middle contract? How would you describe it?
I mean, I would say it's a middle of the road kind of contract. We work on many different things, from full integration of telematic solutions for some of the OEMs to much smaller things where we talk about integration of, say, Bluetooth interoperability for handset validation. So yeah, this is definitely a middle of the road type of project for us, I would say.
And then give us an example of some of these other projects. I know you work in the aerospace industry and obviously the automotive. What sorts of projects are you doing typically there?
So, I mean, it's quite broad. But let's say some new examples. Actually, let's go off of something we showed at the auto show in the automobility section this past week, and that's really focused on autonomous validation. And we feel that's a big challenge that the automotive industry is facing, that we need to come up with a great solution to be successful, because the way validation is being done today, you hear about all the news of Ubers and Google testing in Arizona and Michigan and Nevada and other regions, mm-hmm. With their vehicles on the road. And what we're working to do is take that, you know, really where they're gaining a lot of experience by putting millions of miles on the road and putting a structure behind it of how can I validate all those different scenarios that I will experience in the vehicle environment. So we're working on hill development for autonomous vehicles, and then also what we showed at the auto show, which was focused on kind of final stage vehicle validation. I have a fully integrated car, but I want to make sure it's performing as expected in autonomous vehicles. So that's one example. In the aerospace region, we work very heavily in wire harness design and into integration of components into aircraft. And actually, a lot of that knowledge we feel is going to start to merge into the auto industry when you look at autonomous or automated vehicles.
Hmm. And you have a technology, MDAPT.
Yes. So that the MDAP is what I kind of alluded to there is a solution that we're developing to provide that final stage of validation to a vehicle. If when I come to validate a fully integrated, fully set up automated vehicle, I want to ensure that it's meeting the expectations of safety and the regulations and what's being defined by, say, SAE and other bodies, and then also expectations of the driver or the consumer. And we feel that you need a data acquisition and a data analysis system that really runs on top of the vehicle and can't rely on what the vehicle is doing itself. And it's so complicated, you can't rely on just a human sitting behind the wheel as a safety driver and saying, yes, this vehicle manages a maneuver correctly.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about now locally. I know you have 4,000 folks around the world, but what do you have here in Michigan? What do you have?
Yeah, so in Michigan, we're close to 200 people. We're headquartered in Southfield, and actually, we've just added a second office with a very large workshop space in Madison Heights. So we're actually growing here in Michigan over the last year, and really excited about where the industry is going. We love the technology that everybody in automotive is thinking about and the challenges that we want to address and are facing. And we love to be a part of that.
All right. We're a little under 3 minutes to go here. So I want to ask you the question I always ask everybody. Are you hiring at this point? And if so, what skill sets? And if I'm interested in working for P3, how do I go about contacting you?
Sure. Yes. We are definitely in a constant hiring mode. So we're looking for engineers. We love engineers that really know electronics and those new challenging technologies and have some software skills and software background. And then we also have the other portion of business, which is really focused into consulting and project management. So we're really looking for people that are strategic thinkers. How can new technology reinvent the industry? And then how can we take that technology and bring it into implementation through project management, manage those projects so that they are successful in their launch? So those are three really core areas that we're looking for strong talent. We'd really love to, bring people here into Southeast Michigan and really work with the people that are here today.
All right. And the website is, Colin?
The website is www.p3-group.com.
All right. I want to thank Colin Goldsmith, Managing Partner of P3 Group, for being with us here today. I want to thank all of our guests today. Colin Goldsmith of P3, Enrico Schaefer from Drone Law Pro, and TraverseLegal.com, their new handle online and their new office in Detroit. Tim Berchet, great as usual, brought in one of the co-founders of Priva, which wants to give you a really nice ride if you have to
travel. Quite literally, yes.
Yes, which if you have to travel on business. And we kicked off the show with Mike and I sort of speculating about the future of the North American International Auto Show.
Yeah, it was a very auto-focused show today. I think, all four of them were auto-focused for a change.
Yep.
But that's Detroit, right?
Well, we do that once in a while. Yeah. Anyway, we'll be back with you again at 2 o'clock Eastern Time next Monday. For right now, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast. a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.